Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. I hope listeners are keeping as cool as possible and that you're able to find time early in the day to get outdoors to check on your plants. It's even more important than ever during this heat wave, not just for our sakes, but for that of the plants, to go out and water gardens early in the morning. If the soil is dry an inch below the surface, it's time to water. Most gardens need about an inch of water per week, delivered through deep watering as opposed to the occasional casual sprinkle, and should be done about 3 times a week in this kind of heat. Avoid watering after 3 p.m. not only because it's dangerously hot for humans, but this also may lead to foliar diseases. I'll have an additional word about that in a minute. The water on the leaves will evaporate gradually then and help cool the plants, just as perspiration on our skin helps keep us marginally cooler, at least if there's a breeze and you can find some shade. Something over which we have no control are the occasional pop-up showers that sometimes develop late in the day, and a look at the long-range forecast seems to indicate that this may be a pattern through the coming week of July 6. If this occurs, if it's possible, it helps to water again immediately after the light downburst ends, especially if the rain shower amounts to only maybe a half inch or so, which often is the case with this type of weather event. The reason for further watering is that you want to add enough moisture to ensure that it penetrates down 5 or 6 inches. Plants that are accustomed to frequent light watering don't send the roots down into the soil searching for moisture, so if a daily light sprinkle from a hose is not forthcoming, the plant definitely will be stressed. Also, light rain showers or a daily casual light watering from a hose or sprinkler will not build up a reserve of water in the soil. Of course, a thick mulch around your plants is the best way to conserve water that is present in the soil, and also will help avoid an alternate drought and flood situation, which is not good for plants, especially tomatoes. If you get blossom end rot on your tomatoes, that is indicative of irregular watering, which prevents the plants from accessing the calcium in the soil. The mention of this condition leads me to add the stern directive to the gardener not to add tums or eggshells or other such home remedies to the soil, thinking that will be a quick fix for blossom end rot. It's not. Just pay attention to your watering schedule and the problem soon will correct itself. Your later fruits should be fine. Organic mulches reduce evaporative moisture losses from the soil surface, and because the soil stays cooler, it also reduces transpiration water losses. If you've not already mulched your vegetable plants, lay a thick layer of straw or chopped leaves down on top of the soil after a good thorough watering. Plants may wilt and look especially droopy with temporary wilting during the heat of midday, but this doesn't necessarily mean it's time to water. Some plants go through an obvious midday slump, especially on very hot days. After all, who doesn't? But this is a natural adaptation to its environment. Visit your garden again in the early evening and see if the wilted plants haven't regained some turgidity. If you're still planting some seedlings over the summer, as I often do to ensure long-term harvests, saturate each planting hole before you add the seedling. Then gently firm the soil up around the roots and stem and water lightly again just to settle it in. The disadvantage to using a sprinkler is that wet foliage may develop foliar diseases, as I implied earlier. Water at the soil level if you at all can, but since we can't control the natural rain showers, hope for the best when we do get those late afternoon or evening ones. Downy mildew is one foliar problem that some plants are especially susceptible to. Squash and Monarda species of plants, Monarda also is called bee balm, these are two that immediately come to mind. Since I got my summer squash and cucumbers planted rather later than I normally like to, while I have picked one tasty young cucumber, there's only one tiny squash coming on. Normally, I expect to be weary of those fruits before they succumb to the inevitable onslaught of cucumber beetles, squash bugs, or squash vine borers, and what I've done in previous years, in hopes of prolonging the harvest, is to dust the leaves of all the cucurbits with DE, diatomaceous earth. Since I don't want to harm the bees as they work, I'm careful to avoid dusting the flowers themselves. Nor do I want to deter the various general predators that may be on patrol, insects such as green lacewings, assassin bugs, minute pirate bugs, soldier beetles, ground beetles, and various spiders, all of which I welcome to my yard. DE itself is not a poison, but works as an insecticide by mechanically damaging the exoskeleton of various pest insects. Although it feels like soft talcum powder to us, the sharp edges of the DE particles pierce the protective outer layer of the pests, causing them to lose essential bodily fluids. As a result, the insects ultimately dehydrate and die. So, in hopes of thwarting the squash vine borer, a brightly colored moth that really looks like some sort of fat orange and black bee or a wasp, I've been dusting the base of all my squash plants, since it's there that the borer lays its eggs. Once the larvae hatch, these bore into the thick plant stem, leaving behind a trail of chewed plant sawdust as well as frass. I've mentioned that word frass before, do you remember? It's the correct term for caterpillar excrement. Unless the larva is found excavating the stem and removed, the plant will come to an early demise. One word of caution, it's best to wear a mask when applying diatomaceous earth, because the powder is very fine and it is imperative not to get it into your lungs. Another pest that often is present in the hundreds, if not thousands, in many yards is the Japanese beetle. Interestingly, I have seen none again this summer, nor did I see any at all last summer, although I have had them on various plants in previous years. What about cicadas? Are you hearing their rasping song where you are? I am not, though another look at my garden diary indicates that I first heard the first cicada calling in my yard on June 29th in 2024. The number of times last summer that I noted the strident calls of these large bugs, for they are bugs, not beetles, seemed markedly fewer, and I suspect the same thing may be the case this year. As scientists have been warning us for years, and as I keep repeating in my programs, because it bears repeating, insect numbers are noticeably declining, and this year, just as in the last few years, people I talk to have reported seeing very few butterflies of any kind. I see fewer bees of all sorts, and I've not seen a single black swallowtail caterpillar on any of the large beds of dill in full bloom that I have here and there around our yard. I was pleasantly surprised, however, to see a large monarch caterpillar munching contentedly on one of my swamp milkweed plants about a week or so ago, but nary a one ever since on any of the other three patches of common milkweed in the yard. And so far, only a single stray milkweed beetle has appeared on any of the three species of milkweed that I have. So even though it seems like more and more people are aware of the value of most insects and are making it a point to plant native flowers for the pollinators, no one seems to be showing up for the buffet. But we cannot give up. The greater the variety of native plants, birds, and, yes, insects that you attract to your yard, the more nature will be in balance, and the so-called bad bugs will not get the upper hand. I've mentioned before that more than 97% of insect species are either directly beneficial to gardens or have no impact at all on human activity, leaving less than 3% that are agricultural or nuisance pests. Well, let's venture out of the garden now and take a virtual trip along some of the county roads and catch up on what's growing there. Of course, sad to say, mostly what we'll see are invasive alien plants, but know thine enemy, as the saying goes, so we should learn to recognize these by name. Again, according to my records, what I'm seeing as far as the growth stage in many roadside plants seems to be a couple of weeks ahead of what I've seen in other years. Wild parsnip and poison hemlock now are pretty well finished blooming and are into their seed stages, with the flowers and foliage fading to a dull beige as the seeds ripen. This makes the species no less harmful, however, so still be cautious when venturing out into fields or trimming plants along the roadway and not touching them. Canada, or creeping thistle, which is ubiquitous along many roadsides in Ohio, has mostly all gone to seed now, too. Just the other day, I was driving along Barks Road West and noticed a large patch of the fluffy whitish seed heads awaiting for another good wind to go sailing forth to spread their prickly misery elsewhere. This invasive species of thistle grows 3 to 4 feet tall and is found in all 88 Ohio counties in a wide variety of habitats. It's native to Europe, North Africa, and Asia, and this species came to North America in contaminated grain in the early 1600s. They also likely rode along on the dirt-encased hooves of livestock, as did many of our other now well-known, well-established problem plants. Creeping thistle has the ability to form dense stands that crowd out other vegetation due to its rhizomatous root system. This means it's able to send out underground shoots from its roots that fairly quickly form dense colonies. Pulling this pest is futile, since the least bit of root left behind has the ability to sprout into a new plant. Now white Queen Anne's lace, blue chicory flowers, tall yellow hawkweed, black-eyed Susans, fleabane, and daisies are just some of the flowers that are making pretty rows of color along the highways. You're also likely to have noticed massed groups of brown-hugging yellow flowers growing in profusion all along the hard-packed stony edges of highways and even into mowed fields around corporate centers and here and there. This is bird's foot trefoil, widespread now throughout Ohio, and was introduced from Europe possibly as early as the mid-1700s. It is still valued as an agronomic crop, although it often has escaped cultivation and can become a bothersome weed. Compared with other legumes, this species tolerates a wider variety of moisture conditions and soil types, and so frequently is found on drought-prone soils that are low in fertility, and so it's useful for erosion control. The tall, spiny stalks of teasels are now shooting up roadside, and soon their porcupine-like flower heads will be decked in pale lavender flowers. This is another introduced plant, and the name teasel derives from Old English words relating to the verb to tease, because the dried heads of the plant once were used in the textile industry to tease, that is, to raise the nap on woolen cloth. Even today, some craftspeople who weave wool simply prefer to use the teasel for the same time-honored purpose, claiming that the result is better, since if the teasel meets serious resistance in the fabric, it will break, whereas a metal tool will rip the cloth. Well, time flies, and so that's it for this week. Remember that weeds often appear after a rain, so if you can, try to pull tiny weeds that appear before they get big, since they do grow much faster than cultivated plants. This is Carol Kelly saying, keep yourself and your plants cool, keep your weeds pulled and your plants watered, now that we have plunged full steam ahead into muggy summertime in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it. Thank you for listening.